Well, Vibhu Chaitanya is not here. Yes?
No, he's on his way.
On his way. Vibhu Chaitanya is little where we are right now with our financial requirement. He informed me yesterday evening we're about somewhere between 1/4 and 1/3 of the way where we need to be just to cover expenses for prasadam and things. This space here is costing us $100 for the whole day. There, people are very generous, very kind. I mean, what Premananda was sharing, very, very popular, you know, just very nice people. It's not the space, it's just the prasadam that we're taking and, you know, other practical arrangements. And our out-of-town participants have been the only contributors, or primary contributors. So if the devotee's here, when Vibhu Chaitanya comes, please approach him and help make this, you know, something that we can pay the price tab at the end. And there will be some CDs, including some CDs that Keshavacharya studio recorded, I guess, and that will help also to cover our expenses. There's the contribute something and get something and take this experience home with you. How many attended the Nama Yagya last night? The feedback that I got from those that did was, wow, very, it's Geshe-Vacharya holding his throat. This was wow experience for him too. But immersion in the holy name is something that's enlivening for the soul. Sometimes Prabhupada would liken it to polishing a diamond. I've never seen a diamond that's not been polished, but a diamond that's not polished doesn't sparkle. Its sparkle quality is there. Just polish, remove the covering and the sparkle comes out. So that's what we've been polishing, so that the sparkle, the happiness, the inherent quality of the soul in relationship to Krishna comes out. So this session and the next session, as well as the earlier morning, are specifically dedicated to our 32 round day tomorrow. I hope as many people as possible can participate in that. Doing a very focused, dedicated chanting of japa together, just as with the Nama Yagya was very powerful. That is also very powerful, those who have done so before. Even our children, and even some very new people who had never chanted before, through that experience, to this day are chanting. And they're chanting and being happy. That's a powerful experience. And also beyond the 32 round day, the increasing the quality and quantity of chanting. Is what I'm hoping to do, is just give some pointers or some inspirations, something that you can take shelter of during that 32 round morning, actually it's just half a day, and thereafter. So a nice place to begin that discussion is, what does quality chanting mean? To say quality chanting, what's that? But Prabhupada was asked that question one time. What is quality chanting, Srila Prabhupada? You want to hear what Prabhupada said? I want to hear it again. This is a transcription of a morning walk conversation in Nairobi with Srila Prabhupada and Brahmananda and some others. And doesn't print the year here, but I think it's 1974, but whatever the year. The devotee spoke up. When chanting our 16 rounds, we are not sure if these rounds are sincere. Srila Prabhupada, you should be sure. Devotee, how can we be sure? Prabhupada, there is beads. There are beads. Brahmananda. No, Srila Prabhupada, he's saying that when we chant our rounds, how can we be sure that when we chant the round, that the round is a perfect, attentive round, sincere? Prabhupada. Therefore, it is Shastra. You must. There is no question of understanding. Brahmananda, the quality of the chanting, he's asking, how can we make the quality the best? Prabhupada, quality. You'll understand, first of all, comes the quality. Without having quality, how he'll understand the quality? You follow the instruction of your spiritual master, of the Shastra, that is your duty. Quality, no quality. It is not your position to understand. Prabhupada's in a certain mood this morning. When the quality comes, there is no force. You will have a taste for chanting. You will desire at that time, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000 rounds? That is quality. That is quality. It is by force. You'll not do it, therefore at least 16 rounds. But when you come to quality, you will feel yourself, why 16? Why not 16,000? That is quality, automatically. Just like Haridas Thakur was doing. He was not forced to do. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he requested. Now you are old enough, you can reduce. So he refused. No. Up to the end of my life, I shall go on. That is quality. Have you got such tendency? That you will go on chanting and nothing to do? That is quality. Now you are forced to do. Where is the question of quality? That is, given a chance so that one day you will come to the quality. Not that you have come to the quality. Quality is different. Ahaituki. Asakti, attachment. Just like Rupa Goswami says, that how shall I chant with one tongue? And how shall I hear two ears? Had it been millions of tongues and trillions of ears, then I could enjoy it. That is quality. Quality is not so cheap. Maybe after many births. For the time being, you will go on following the rules and regulations. It is being done by force. Where is the quality? So you wanted to understand quality? This is the quality. You'll not be forced, but automatically you'll desire. That is quality. I am writing books. I'm not being forced by anyone. Everyone can do that. Why one does not do it? Why I get up at night, 1 o'clock, do this job? Because I cannot do without it. how one will do it artificially. That is quality. Therefore, they like my purports. The quality is shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Oh, I do not see Govinda. The whole world is vacant. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. This is quality. Just like we have got practical example. One man's beloved has died. And so he sees the whole universe vacant. Is it vacant? So that is the quality of love. So there is no formula of quality. It is to be understood by himself. Just like if after eating something you feel refreshed and get strength, that is quality. You haven't got to take certificate. Will you give me a certificate that I have eaten? You'll understand whether eaten or not. That is quality. When you will feel so much ecstasy in chanting, Hare Krishna, that is quality. Not artificially. Chant, chant, otherwise get out. That is not quality. This is in expectation that someday you may come to quality. That requires time. That requires sincerity. But quality is there. Shravanadi shuddha chitte karaye. It will be awakened, not by force, just like love between two persons, it cannot be forced. You must love him. You must love her. Oh, that is not love. That is not love. When automatically you love one another, that is quality. Dora vede prema. And therefore, formally, at least in Indian society, at an early age, they were married. There is no quality in that quality. But gradually, remaining together, the quality of love increases. Then the wife takes care of the husband and the husband takes care. They become bound up, united in love. That is quality. In the beginning, Prabhupada described this system. The older generation folks will understand this one, but for the rest of us, born in the West and younger generation, Prabhupada described that young boy, young girl, very young, like before they even knew what marriage, what that means. They were married. So on the boy's birthday, the girl would bring something. Something she baked or cooked or something. And he accepted and tasted, oh, this is very nice on my birthday. And then the boy on the girl's birthday, he would bring something and, oh, this is very nice. On my birthday. So they would come to understand they have this relationship and she serves him and he serves her. And they just, the one day you'll, whatever it means, you'll live together and you'll give things to one another. And that's, so they would become attached. It would grow, and the example the Prabhupada gave is that as that generated a bond of affection between the two before they had any sense of what the mature stage of that might look like. It was nurtured by the parents of both small children. And then when of age, they would live together. But their marriage was not just like, engaged. They were married, legally married. But she stayed with her parents and he stayed with his parents until they grew up. And then when in the mature stage, that affection was already there, they would live together as husband and wife. Prabhupada likens the bhakti process. Before we really understand what it means to go back home, back to Godhead, we're largely thinking, I don't like suffering. This isn't nice. I don't like this place. I want that place, whatever that place is. We don't have a clear idea what that place is or what life is. In the spiritual world is, but we want that place. Immature. But some affinity. by association with one who understands what having affinity is for the spiritual world, and affinity, attachment for Krishna. So like that, our chanting is the obligatory chanting, or maybe something, some happiness that is in Rupa Goswami's explanation. It's a form of bhakti avas. It's a shadow, or it's a reflection of the real happiness. In our day, the marriage was performed when the girl is 10, 12 years, 9 years. 12 years is a very late marriage. My sister, she became 12 years old, so my mother became so disturbed that this girl is not being married, I shall commit suicide. Yes. You see, my eldest sister, she was 9 years old, older than me, and she was married before my birth. And my mother-in-law was married at the age of 7. But that other kind of marriage that I described, they didn't live with the husband. They lived at their home until they were... And my father-in-law was 11. I was married. My wife was 11 years. So, in this age, there's no question of love. It is not that the husband and wife lives together, no. Unless the girl is grown up, she is not going to the husband. She remains with the father and mother. Sometimes they meet, and the wife is taught, giving some sweetmeat to the husband. Official. The parents of the girl, just go to your husband and offer this. Okay. So she becomes an obedient servant. But gradually they get the connection. In this way, the love develops, and when they're 15, 16 years old, they're allowed to live together. Because both of them have already developed that she is my wife, he is my husband, psychologically. So Prabhupada is making that comparison to our present stage of chanting, compared to the quality stage of chanting. And our topic is how to increase quality, get closer to that. And I'll repeat it several times just to help give us focus on the 32-round day. Because it's one of the rules of life, the anticipation, preparing oneself for a very wonderful experience, getting up early in the morning and chanting the holy name. The effect of chanting minimally starts on a particular day, starts the day before. Minimally, it starts the evening before. This is a teaching from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is a general teaching that he offered his advice. That at the end of the day, this is, you know, self-assessment. At the end of the day, you review the day. What went well? What didn't go well? Then some commitment to try to make better some particular area. And then he also specifically describes to, and recommends, to, he encourages to fix the mind on the morning devotional practice that you'll be doing. So when the mind is anticipating that nice practice, it's much easier to get up and with an expectant mind to eagerly go forward into the activity of chanting the holy name. In a similar way, Prabhupada introduced, not so much explaining this way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, he introduced in the evening activity before taking rest reading Krishna book. It's like many parents do that with their children, they read Krishna book. And besides, it's nice. Later on, parents find out how much absorption took place when the children heard Krishna book. They know the stories, and they'll tell you, I want to hear that story. If you don't tell them the story, they'll start telling the story. They know the story. Backwards and forward, they know the story. With all the details, as much detail as you supply, if the impression is made. Again and again, they've heard this from parents. Their children can recite Krishna book stories like from memory. Because they've heard them and heard them and heard them. And by hearing in the evening, that's what thought appears in the mind in the morning, in the direction of or in relation to Krishna. You know, adults can have the same experience. You don't have to be a child to read Krishna book or think of Krishna or anticipate devotional activity. But it helps to have quality sadhana, to anticipate that time that you'll be spending with Krishna. Very special, special time. It's similar that many devotees, just before we came here for the Festival of the Holy Name, devotees that have been here before were sharing, I can't wait. That the expectation was, ooh. And that makes the experience, you know, the receptivity of the activity even more. I'm going to be discussing that in a focused way this evening, receiving the Holy Name. So, I want to spend a little time covering, I'll give credit to the source, Burijan Prabhu, who is kind of like the originator of the idea of japa retreats. He and Satchinandan Swami kind of pioneered that in a very quiet way. After Kartik month was over, some people that Satchinandan Swami was in touch with in Europe and some people that Burijan was in touch with in India, very quietly they went to Govardhan. After Kartik, everybody's cleared out, place is quiet again. You know, it's a little cold, so it's like, you know, it's austere, so many people don't want to stick around because it's too cold. They went to Govardhan, in a very quiet place. They, you know, deliberately remote, away from the Krishna Balaram, Mandir, you know, pilgrim chaos. Or traffic and noise. So, he did it for several years. Then it started to become a more broadly spread practice. And this is just a little mini sampler of something like that. So there are four tips. This is four tips in chanting. And hopefully, one or maybe more of these will really resonate. And when you do your 32-round day tomorrow, it will help you. It will elevate, that resonance will elevate your quality absorption in the Holy Name. The first one is very simple. Actually, they're all very simple. It's especially simple. The phrase is one mantra at a time. You can't chant more than one mantra at a time anyway. But the mind has the tendency while you're chanting one mantra, to be absent, to be planning something in the future, or to be lamenting over something in the past, or reprocessing at least. And even in terms of your chanting, the lousy rounds that you just chanted, and anticipating the good mantras you want to chant coming up, and being absent from the mantra that you're presently chanting. So, one mantra at a time. That's a good plan, because one mantra, then the next mantra makes one round. Then you have one mantra at a time, nice, you have a nice round. But you're not going to have a nice round if it's not one mantra. So it's very practical. And it's very powerful. There are different ways of saying the same thing, but that's a very simple way of saying the same thing. Here's another very simple way of saying the same thing. Be present. Being present is a little more warm, a little more personal. It's like, you know, when you're... We've all had the experience. If you're with somebody and their mind is distracted, they're physically there, but their thoughts aren't. And you wonder, you know, maybe we should reschedule our time together because it seems like your mind is distracted. Let's, you know, get together another time. Or maybe some people are just like that all the time. They're never present no matter what's going on. And it doesn't build a strong relationship if there's absenteeism on one or both parties' part. In any relationship, doesn't matter. Friend and friend, or husband and wife, or parent and child, and just absenteeism. The opposite is be present. It requires the exercise that we did yesterday is bringing the mind. So here's our, where'd the chart go? Oh, there it is. Okay. There's the mind. You'll bring the mind to be present. Then another gate, another dvaram, gopuram, is the heart. So that's like receiving and giving in any relationship. And align the mind to the heart. And then the soul, because the quality of the sound vibration of Krishna's name is none different than the quality of the soul in the sense that they're both fully spiritual. So if there's alignment of mind, heart, and soul while chanting, if you're present with Krishna when chanting any given mantra that you're chanting, or each of the mantras that you're chanting, and you can detect the qualitative difference, yourself subjectively or another person. We won't do this now because of time, but we'll do this at the Japa retreat in Ketanagari, where we can have persons break up in pairs and listen to another person's chanting and critique their chanting. Oh, the quality of the chanting goes way up when that happens. When I had more time than I presently have, I had a practice where I requested devotees, please record your chanting of your japa. I'd like to listen. You can rehearse all you like, but then there's the performance. Please record it, and I'd like to listen. And two things, two primary things. The person said, wow, that really helped me pay attention to my chanting. And the other thing was that when I was listening to their chanting, I could very easily tell, just by listening, when they were present and when they were absent. You can hear it qualitatively. The mind starts to drift and the quality of the chanting starts to go down. Not just slurring of the words, it's just less presence. The person is less present. The name is, the sound is still there. It's going on. It's in the recording. But they're less present. So those are just different examples of the same message. To assist you in your chanting, we'll just keep this phrase one mantra at a time. Or be present. You can say be present with Krishna. Or just be present. Or just present. Not the other kind of present. Be present. When you're present with Krishna when chanting the holy name, you don't need to worry about what's going to happen later, because Krishna will empower you. Because if you're being present with him, he will empower you to make wise, decisions about what to do. But that comes later, not while you're chanting. Multiprocessing is our common practice, and the way people lead their lives, it encourages it. But when it's the opposite benefit when chanting. It's actually the opposite benefit when you're doing anything. You should be fully present when you're doing each thing. Those bad habits with other things still have a tendency to spill over but into chanting. But when chanting, be present. It will empower you to be present and effectively, in shorter time, with greater effectiveness and wisdom, because Super Soul will supply the wisdom, and the time energy just works differently when you're with Krishna than when you're not. Anyway, practice being present with Krishna. So it's in its two way. It's receiving and calling. One mantra at a time. And if the previous mantra was sloppy, don't lament and bother yourself over that previous mantra or series of mantras. The next mantra, this mantra, be present. Try to hear one mantra at a time. Very simple. For those that have a tendency to kind of ride the chariot of the mind, this helps a lot. Okay. They go sequentially. Not exactly, but some kind of sequence. Next one. Number two. Neglect the mind. So you're trying to bring full attention one mantra at a time. And that's when it becomes, when you try to do that, it'll become more evident than it is otherwise of what's going on all the time, as the mind is always demanding attention. It's like a child that wants something, and if you don't pay attention to what they want, they make sure they get your attention. They want something. However many times, however loud they have to say it, how many times they scream, they want something. And the mind is like a child. The advice, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's advice, ignore it. Indicate, not children, but the mind. The mind. or a better word is neglect. Like, you know that it's there, but just don't give it energy. Give it a little energy and it's a monster. And once it's a monster, it takes over. It becomes overwhelming. And you like, oh, I've got to take care of this monster because otherwise it's too oppressive. So, learned that art of, rather than planning your day or solving your problem or lamenting over how something went or you could have done something in the past differently or etc., etc., it's an assist or it follows behind one mantra at a time, is other things that want to crowd in, you leave a little wiggle room and they want to wiggle in, neglect it. A nice scriptural example of this is, well, two, the Avanti Brahman. 11th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita section, where Krishna is narrating to Uddhava, it's a whole chapter, the Avanti Brahman is the title of the chapter. And the relevant part of that chapter is the Avanti Brahman, the Brahmana from Avanti, he completely loses everything. He loses his wealth, he loses his family, he loses respectability, he loses everything. He's smashed, he's powdered. And there's only one thing left, and that's the Brahminical practice that he had abandoned before he got powdered. So he takes shelter of his practices. And while he's taking shelter of his practices, his family has left him. People ridicule him. The children call him names, throw stones at him. He takes his begging bowl and sets it down and they pass urine in it. Because if you're just taking advantage of people. You're a cruel, mean, nasty person. We don't like you. Because he was behaving mean and cruel and nasty. He has only one shelter. That's his mantra. That's his devotional practice. Everything else is gone. And he's suffering. And then he turns his attention to, what's the cause of my suffering? He goes through a whole string of options. Maybe it's my karma. Maybe it's providence. Maybe it's the stars. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's chance. And he rules them all out and says that there's only one thing, the mind. We discussed this yesterday with Rishabh Dev's instructions to Bharat Maharaj about the mind. The cause of our suffering. So that the mind that wants to take us away from Krishna's holy name when we're chanting Krishna's holy name should be neglected. Prabhupada gives this example. If you want to tame a wild animal, supposing people do that, they go into the jungle and they capture a wild animal. One of the ways to tame the wild animal is you starve them. You starve them and starve them and starve them until they're so weak. Then you give them a little something. Just so they can live. But they're still starving. And you give them another little something, just so they can live and like that for some time. And eventually, that wild animal, you can extend your hand and give them something, and they'll just take the something and not your hand. And the mind is like that. Prabhupada described. One of the ways to conquer the mind is to neglect it or starve it rather than give it attention. Oh, you're so important. I better pay attention to my mind because, after all, it's my mind. It's me, or at least it's so important. I've got this thought, I've got this feeling, and it's so important I have to tell everybody about it. At least, like, make sure I pay a lot of attention to it. Anyway, advice when you're chanting your 32 round day tomorrow, and the mind proposes something, or 50 somethings, neglect those proposals. It's just, you know, 4 hours, roughly, out of the year. And you came here from some distance, many of you, to participate, or some sacrifice of some kind. Participate with full attention. And whatever that is that's being proposed by the mind, you can do it later. And if it can't be done, I mean, most things can be done later. Those that have children may have to attend to their children and so on, but most things could be attended to later. Neglect the mind. Then the third, my mind doesn't want to be neglected. And feelings of humility, feelings of my sincere, as sincere and diligent of an effort as I'm making, I'm so fallen. I'm so far from that which it seems like, and we hear this when we do our, you know, feedback sessions. So many devotees are chanting so nicely, and I can't. I'm just like, I'm so fallen, I'm not able to do that. Those feelings of humility are actually good. They're, you know, if they can, if we're egoistic, then it completely takes our attention away. But if we're striving genuinely in a spiritual direction, it's very good. Because in that sense of deep humility, then one can sincerely call out, like the verse that we read of Queen Kunti yesterday morning, those who have no material shelter, have their only Sri Krishna, it may be very kind and take away apparent shelters. Like, I can't even control my mind. My best friend. He's not allowing me to be successful, but I've always been successful. All I know is how to be successful. Look at, I can tell you all the things I've been successful at. This thing, that thing, and I can't even chant Hare Krishna mantra successfully. But that may happen, and if deep feelings of humility enter the heart, that's good. It opens the heart for taking shelter in the holy name, the mercy of Krishna. Rely to chant with better quality, rely upon the mercy of Krishna, not just one's own efforts. So we can call this one humility, or namashraya. Namashraya in a mood of humility. Calling out in that mood of humility. So that which I just described, that's a feeling coming from the heart. Calling Krishna's name, even I have no qualification, and my 32 rounds this morning are demonstrating I have no qualification. It's a call to continue with enthusiasm. It's a call that it has to be a call from the heart with great humility. And this enters the fourth tip or practice. Um, calling out with great fervent appeal for Krishna's causeless mercy. I don't have qualifications, so Krishna, there's no reason or obligation on your side to fulfill my request, but please show your mercy. And if it's casual, then, well, why not expect Krishna to be casual? I've had the experience, for example, of being in a room with a group of devotees, and all of a sudden, one mother bolts from the room and runs to another room because she heard that very special call of her child from another room. And, you know, I hear all kinds of calls from children from the other side of the room, but somehow mothers know there's the everyday, you know, noise making, and then there's the blood curdling, you know, they'll burst a gasket if you don't show up fast. And they know the difference between those sound vibrations. Krishna knows also the sincerity, the genuine sincerity of our calling upon him. So it's a nice practice, and you'll perhaps get the chance tomorrow if you're out on the desert instead of in an oasis of the chanting of the holy name, but it's just you chant it, and you were hoping it would be a wonderful experience, and it's the opposite. It's the driest. I was at a japa retreat in Ojai, California a couple summers ago. And it was for Prabhupada disciples, though he said a dedicated, you know, we didn't put a criterion, but it turned out it was devotees that had dedicated 35 to 45 years of devotional service in Prabhupada's movement and wanted to improve the quality of their chanting. And I've asked Mother Rasagya if I could share this. She said, sure, so I'm going to share, use her name. Mother Rasagya is a wonderful Vaishnavi who I've known for years and years and years from our service together with her husband in the Brooklyn Temple. Now she's living in Austin, Texas. So she came to this retreat, and her sharing afterwards was her anticipation was, right, you know, it was very, very wonderful for our 64-round day. She really wanted to go more deeply into the chanting of the holy name and experience Krishna in the form of his holy name. And, you know, she's a very sincere devotee. So that was her expectation that we shared on the first day. And at the end of the 64-day, she was even describing it, she was crying. She said it was the most torturous experience I've had in my life. My thoughts were flooded with all the bad things that I've done to people, all the hurtful things that I've said and done and neglect, and, you know, it wouldn't stop. And I was calling out to Krishna, besides, please forgive me. My expectation was shelter of you. And it went on for almost the entire 64 rounds up to like the last 12 rounds or something. She said, I just was crying. I had to go to my room and I continued chanting, was just crying and crying. And I finally just let go. And Krishna, you can do with me what you like. And all of a sudden, she said, it was like I was in an elevator. And then I could realize several things. Like, this was wonderful too. Because it was actually, Krishna was helping me understand who are the persons I have to go and ask forgiveness from before I leave this world. And that my heart becomes softer in dealings with others. And actually, I'm fully under Krishna's control, whether it's here or here. It's not I'm only under Krishna's control here. I'm under Krishna, and that's wonderful. Krishna is very kind and loving. Her thoughts went to Sudama, Brahman, when he was returning home. He had nothing. That's when he went to see Krishna. When he reached his home, he didn't see his home. He saw a palace. So it's Krishna's mercy or Krishna's mercy. It's we're under the care of Krishna's mercy. There's so many realizations, although the experience was very different than the expectation of the experience. But it was Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy. The intense calling for Krishna's mercy. It's not just something in a storybook or for our great acharyas in some biography of our acharyas somewhere. It's the opportunity is for us immediately. The classic with this one is the Damodara Leela. Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna, like we might try to bind Krishna with our nice chanting. But effort is not enough. It must be combined with mercy of Krishna. I'll just share one other example of this. There's a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in connection with Krishna's leaving the rasa dance and the gopis searching for Krishna and they're being unable to find Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in that section describes how Krishna was thinking while the gopis were searching for him. But that's very confidential, isn't it? What was Krishna thinking? Well, ask Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur because he knows Krishna's thoughts. Very advanced Vaishnava. It's not, anyway, not speculation. It's he has such an intimate relation with Krishna. The essence is that Krishna was deliberately increasing the hankering of the gopis. So here's Krishna's thoughts. For those surrendered souls who worship me through Nam, Kirtan, and other means, I do not respond in order to make their worship more perfect. O gopis, who cannot understand my real intention, not seeing me, those surrendered souls develop deep humility, feeling, alas, alas, everything I have done has been useless. Does this sound familiar, the voice of the mind? Because I am an offender, Krishna has not shown me even the slightest favor towards me. Let me be damned. This is Krishna speaking. By constantly thinking in this way, those who have not yet developed mature love for me will become free from lust and anger and awaken pure devotion, full of power and brilliance. So those periods of nothing seems to be happening. Now, it doesn't qualify, we don't qualify if we're not striving. It can just be complacent, lackadaisical, blah, blah, chanting. Like, you know, not being present with a person and just having a blah, blah conversation where you're not even paying attention, you keep talking and... But when our chanting is like Lord Chaitanya reaching for Krishna, he saw Krishna at Chatak Parvat in Puri, and he ran towards the sand dune because he saw Krishna standing on Govardhan Hill. It wasn't hallucination. He saw Krishna standing on Govardhan Hill because he was so deeply absorbed in love for Krishna. And with that kind of anticipation, if there's yet a period of dry chanting, just hard to chant the next mantra, hard to chant the next mantra, enter into this mood of fervently appealing for Krishna's mercy. And if Krishna doesn't show himself in that circumstance, here's Krishna's reason why: to increase our hankering for him. Because when our increased hankering for him is accomplished, the intensity of the love in separation for Krishna becomes stronger. By constantly thinking in this way, those that have not yet developed mature love for me will become free from lust and anger and awaken pure devotion, full of power and brilliance. So, those are some things, hopefully, that you will resonate with you when you're chanting during your 32-round day tomorrow. And I encourage, if your mindset can enter into that same mood when we have our kirtan right here, the next hour, after the questions and answers, then you can see which, if one of these resonates. This is the application portion. So it gets off the theoretical, on the piece of paper idea and into the heart, and into the practices of bhakti. So I'll take some time for some questions. There's some questions left over from this morning. So if you want to ask practically whatever, stay focused on the holy name, but any range of things that you want to discuss, we'll take some time. How are we with prasadam? Yeah, what time? Okay. Any questions? Farmer, you had one from this morning?
You began the last discussion with a point that, like, the most confidential part of knowledge is to know Krishna. I want to develop a more understanding of, like, what does it mean to know Krishna, and is it ever possible to know Krishna fully?
What does it mean to know Krishna? What does it mean to know Krishna? And what does it mean to know anything? What it means to know Krishna is that you have a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna has, in that relationship, the qualities of Krishna become known and by experience. It's a little bit like Prabhupada's statement here about quality chanting. What's it like to know what quality chanting is? Well, one who has quality chanting can know what it's like. But here's what it's like. It's, what's it like to know Krishna? Krishna becomes everything for such a person. It's love. There isn't anything else that's occupying the mind of that person outside of Krishna. Whatever they're doing, they have various duties, but all of their duties are filled with affection and thought toward Krishna. And through that medium, the qualities of Krishna become impetuses for that love. Udipam, stimulations, as one thinks about this quality, that quality of Krishna. it just spins it further. In Madhurya Kandambani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it's like a continuous eruption of complementary ecstasies. It's not like, you know, a little blip on the screen. It's a constant eruption of complementary ecstasies. That's what it's like to know Krishna.
The second part, I've been asked in a college audience that, like, is it ever possible to know Krishna fully?
You added an adverb. It's not possible for Krishna to know Krishna fully. Prabhupada describes that Krishna sometimes does an inventory of himself. And after having done so, he has expanded. And even Krishna can't know himself fully. He's ever increasing, dynamic. The Bhagavatam, Prabhupada in one purport in the Bhagavatam describes the infinitesimal cannot know the infinite except to the degree that the infinite discloses himself to the infinitesimal. To that degree we can know. Okay? That's a college question and a college answer. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada writes that one who sees that Krishna and the name are non-different is a pure devotee, even though he may be a unified devotee. So I found that statement very moving, and I wanted to know how that relates to, if it does relate to what we discussed this morning, what he was talking about, the fig tree and having that, chanting the holy name once.
Chanting the holy name?
Even once purely will lead to that fruit of love of God.
I'm not sure what your question is. Are you sure what your question is? I'm not. Say anything. Say it again. Don't say it the same thing. Say it differently.
I'll ask it another way.
Okay.
How to understand the statement that Srila Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Instruction, where he says, someone who understands that Krishna and his name are non-different is a pure devotee,
okay,
even though he's a nirvana.
It's like, to understand that statement, it's like understanding Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Bhakti means anyabhilasha tushanyam jnana karma janavratam anupunyena krishna anushiram bhakti uttama. Bhakti means uttam bhakti. So uttam bhakti, which is the topic of nectar devotion, includes sadhana bhakti, includes bhava bhakti, includes prema bhakti. It's not only prema bhakti, or prema bhakti and bhava bhakti, but not sadhana bhakti. It's also sadhana bhakti, provided there's the acceptance and the cultivation of the principle that there is no other shelter but Krishna. So if one understands that Krishna's name are not different, then one's actions will follow that understanding. If one factually understands that, That will be their cultivation. And that fits this other, what we read this morning. Even once, sincerely, offenselessly chanting. That's the, even in the sadhana stage, it will fructify into prema and bhava and prema bhakti. Right? Yeah?
Maharaj, first of all, thank you very much for the wonderful tips on improving the quality of chanting. I have a question on morning
sitting. I'll pass your thanks on to Borijan.
I have a question from the morning lecture actually. So, it is based on my previous understanding and I would request you to kindly correct me if I'm wrong. So, I heard that Srila Prabhupada saying this, that the holy name, when it is chanted or being promoted by non-devotees or materialists, it's like the milk which is tasted by a serpent and which is poisonous. Mm. So, but after hearing the voice of the holy name, it appeared that even anyone like Abbas, even unknowingly if he chants, or even with commercial or different motives, still it will have good effects. So how to understand this half-time paradox?
Well, I can attest to the fact that the first chanting of the holy name that I heard was from a Mayavadi and from the musical hair. So both categories. And I was attracted. Now, I didn't know the difference between, you know, chanting from a pure devotee and chanting from Mayavadi and chanting from a musical materialist. But I was attracted. But when I, after I heard Srila Prabhupada chanting, that happened third, I didn't go back to the musical hair and the Mayavadi. Because there's definitely a qualitative difference. So, your question is specifically how to understand that statement. That if you... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I don't have a, like, you know, a firm, rigid, that kind of an answer or response to your question. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described that one who hears Mayavad philosophy, one is drinking poison. But on the other hand, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasthichadesa Tarine, we're all hearing it. Even in the Western world, doesn't mean like, you know, going, sitting at the feet of a Mayavadi guru and he's teaching Sharirak Bhashya from Shankaracharya. But in general, impersonalism and voidism pervades the conceptions that people have. Even they're, you know, Hindu or Christian or Muslim. It's so deep, you know, even, so, you know, in the name of theism, what to speak of materialism. So we're all drinking poison, we're all dead. Except that, you know, the potency of chanting heard from the pure devotee can revive one as if, you know, at the antidote of poison to check them from death. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that describes like that, specifically. So that's... It's not a hyperbole. Or some exaggeration, just like, you know, better watch out because that's dangerous stuff. It's not just an exaggeration. It's to be avoided as much as milk that's a nice thing touched by the poison from the fangs of a serpent will have poisonous effects. So maybe a reduced summary of what I just said is a little bit of poison won't kill you, but a lot of doses of poison will. If one regularly hears such chanting or such philosophy, then it makes it very, very hard for persons who have using Prabhupada's phrase, read too many books, to then, you know, take shelter in sincerity, in the message of devotion. We see it. I can certainly think of some examples. There's constant hesitation and doubt and non-commitment because of so many ideas and impersonal by nature. Even it may start looking like personal. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Right next to you.
Guru Maharaj, my question is, like, when we chant attentively, does that, like, the holy name at once acts on all the impurities, or
does the holy name act on
the impurities at once, or it, like, sort of removes certain impurities and then the next batch?
Depends on our submission. That what the Bhagavatam says specifically is it acts at once upon the whole body. Prabhupada gives it in a purport. Like a highly potent drug injected intravenously within the body, acts upon the entire body at once, so similarly. This message, when heard properly, as the operative word, acts at once on the whole system. But supposing, you know, we're hearing with less than full submission or less than attentively and, you know, not being fully present, then it won't act entirely on all levels. But we won't be evidenced. Okay?
Because the doubt that I have is sometimes I feel that I got rid of some impurities, but they pop up in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
And this is our first time.
Welcome to the club. So there's residual attachment, and we, you know, there, or submission can be intermittent.
Okay. This is a question on the humility. I'm just trying to understand humility. I always have trouble understanding it. Humility, like a humble person, he always feels I'm lower, so he never feels satisfied with his devotion. He never feels that low.
But it's satisfaction of a different type than the satisfaction that you're speaking about. It's the satisfaction of being in one's natural spiritual position, as opposed to the satisfaction of being lulled into the delusion that everything is okay. That kind of satisfaction is not the satisfaction of the spiritualist. So it's a dialectic. Where there's tension, the tension that says, I'm satisfied, I'm not satisfied. The satisfaction of heart is being in one's relationship with Krishna. In that relationship with Krishna, I'm never doing enough, I'm never sufficiently sincere, my devotion is not sufficiently pure. That's a tension of apparent dissatisfaction, but actually being in my relationship, it brings me into my relationship with Krishna, which is what is fulfilling. The other way, I'm feeling quite contented with myself. I'm very satisfied. That's a deluded state where the relationship with Krishna most likely is absent or very faint and weak. So it's another kind of satisfaction. It's a satisfaction at the soul level, not the mind level. Mind level satisfaction is this other one. I'm okay, you're okay. I'm quite satisfied. That's a bluff. Which one? Bluffing oneself and bluffing others. I had some friends in college, and, you know, towards my becoming a devotee, they had this kind of, you know, elitism thing, pseudo-spiritual elitism thing. And I remember having some discussion with them. There was something that they were dealing with, and I asked, how's it going? They said, everything's under control. You know, that was the last conversation I had with that group of people. Total nonsense. I'm satisfied. Everything's under control. It's just a bluff. Bluffing oneself and bluffing others is not true. That's not satisfaction. So what is satisfaction? Satisfaction is being in one's relationship with Krishna. To be in one's relationship with Krishna, there is this feeling of humility. And that feeling of humility is correct. There is a sense of insufficiency. But Krishna is missing. It's the insufficiency of humility. It's not a low self-esteem. It's, I wish to be more satisfying to Krishna than I am. I wish to be more pure so that I can be with the Supreme Pure. But I'm not at this stage pure. Even one in the most qualified position is, like Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, and Rupa Goswami, they're feeling profound feelings of humility. But what was their relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna? They were recipients of the full mercy of Krishna and the full mercy of Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu confirmed it. Read their writings. But what were they feeling? Humility. Profound humility. Not the worldly kind. Not satisfied with themselves as the worldly person experiences. It's on the spiritual platform, so you can't. It's using the measuring stick of material humility and material satisfaction to spiritual humility and spiritual satisfaction. It doesn't measure. It's the wrong measuring stick. The right one is the contentedness in one's relationship with Krishna, while the dialectic is there at the same time. I'm disqualified. I'm not feelings of humility. Mahaprabhu saying to, Sanatana Goswami saying to Lord Chaitanya, please don't touch me. And Lord Chaitanya saying, I'd love to touch you. It's like a mother with the baby smeared with, mess all over the baby. She loves it. The smell of this oozing of your sores smells like a guru scent to me. Let me embrace you. Or one devotee made a little drawing of when Uddhava comes back after his being sent as a messenger to Vrindavan, and Uddhava returns to Mathura, and Krishna embraces him. What is Uddhava feeling? He's not feeling, I'm special. I get Krishna's embrace. Or Sudama. It's a different kind of satisfaction than the worldly kind of satisfaction. It's not a complacency. It's a humility. It's not unhappy. It's ecstasy. It looks, may look like. Please don't touch me. Please come sit here. I can't sit here. I'm not qualified to sit. They're moved by their humility. Haridas Thakur can't enter the temple. Mahaprabhu respected his mood, built him a place by the Siddha Bakul tree so he could see that. It's humility. It's not like disconnected from Krishna. It's a connection with Krishna because one's heart becomes open. Calling for mercy. It's fullness, it's not incompleteness.
Hindi Maharaj. I just remember the one which you're talking about, the Hindi Maharaj. Ramanujacharya, when he was said to go, you are headed towards Tirupati, Tirumala, he said, he doesn't want to go to Tirumala. He said he was not qualified.
Yeah.
So, climb with his steps, with his foot, he said, I'm not qualified. So, the question I had along with all this, every time you hear, you'll get a different understanding. So, and he said, they mentioned like senior Vaishnavas and the devotees, they go to the Vrindavan and Govardhan to have chanting the whole holy name. And I was reading one of the books from Tanurdhan Maharaj, who has written a book on holy name. He mentioned something like, devotees go and then try to experience and also entering into the holy name. I couldn't understand what is the entering into the holy name. So,
it's a little esoteric. It's like entering into the spiritual world because the holy name is everything. Entering into one's intimate relationship with Krishna is entering into the holy name, because when you're in your intimate relationship with Krishna, the whole spiritual world is there. Everything is there. Everything. The Jamuna, the pulpa vriksha trees, and the surabhi cows. And everything is there. Entering into the holy name. Or entering into the mystery of the holy name is another way of saying the same. Okay. I feel I'm neglecting the ladies, and the time is moving. You have to do it quickly. I have a discussion after. Go ahead.
The philosophy that Lord Chaitanya taught us was simultaneous oneness and difference. I was wondering, with respect to the holy name, is there a, we hear that holy name is non-different from Krishna, which stresses the oneness. Is there also a difference, or
no,
is only oneness?
Yes, but like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, the holy name is Krishna. We'll end at 1 o'clock and we'll have kirtan with your permission until 2 o'clock. That means we'll have lunch. Is it okay to have lunch a half hour later? No one's starting. Okay. But we're going to end at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock. Go ahead.
You mentioned that if you feel refreshed after doing something, that means we have done that with quality. But most of the times when I chant all the 16 rounds, I feel that I don't feel refreshed towards the last few rounds. So is it recommended to stop there and wait for my mind to just come up and just continue?
Yes.
Because I never feel refreshed after that. Towards the day.
That's okay. Keep going.
So tomorrow also, for the 32 round day, I do the same thing.
Yes.
Even if I don't feel refreshed.
That's right. That's right. Be the fig tree. In time, figs will come. Okay? Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful lecture. This is regarding the question regarding the morning class. When Vishnu Dutas in those shlokas, it said that holy name, even without knowing the meaning, it acts like a medicine.
Yes.
It purifies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to understand, that is one statement. And the other statement is inattentive chanting is an offense. Inattentive chanting is an offense.
Inattentive chanting.
Yeah.
Definitely is an offense.
So, one statement it says, even without knowing and things,
Here's the simple answer. We can make it more complicated, but we'll try to keep it simple. The distinction is striving. So, in the beginning stage, it's to be assumed that one is not perfect. But if one is striving for attention, then you're avoiding the offense, striving to avoid the offense. That's Prabhupada called it a clearing stage. That's different than just not striving. You hear that you should chant, so you chant, but you're not striving to be attentive. You're all over the place and not even trying. That's offensive. Try. That's the clearing stage. Totally absorbed in the holy name. That's Shuddha Nam. So there's three distinct stages, not just two. Does that help? Striving.
What I'm trying to understand is, in one statement it says, without knowing it works like a medicine. And the other
it's a medicine. Even that chanting that Ajamila was doing, it was purifying, it was acting. He wasn't intentionally calling Lord Narayan, my dear mind, please be attentive to Lord Narayan. That wasn't the kind of chanting he was doing. But it was still acting. Another example, Shishupal. It comes in the Bhagavatam later. He hated Krishna. With a passion, he hated Krishna. There's a description in Rupa Goswami's writings that when Shishupal was born, because he was a relative of Krishna, he's still a little baby, just born. Somebody called Krishna's, somebody said Krishna's name. He started screaming. And he wouldn't stop. And it went on for hours. It went on all day. The next day, all week, it went on for a month. He was screaming. He hated Krishna so much. And when he was making his 100 offenses against Krishna, and Bhima wanted to kill him, and Krishna stopped him, but when he hit the 100th offense against Krishna, Krishna liberated him. And Yudhisthira asked, how is this possible? And Narada's answer was, just see the power of the holy name. Even in derision and scorn. I wasn't thinking, oh, this will be very good for me. I'll chant 100 times, and I'll get relieved of all of my sinful reactions and get liberation. It acts. It was acting as medicine. Just see the medicinal effect. What to speak of if one does understand and chants in a proper manner. What will be the result? Last question. You go. We'll take two questions. You just go ahead.
This is a question regarding one of the statements that I thought about the Vedic chanting. Like one life at the heart of the Vedic chanting is one relationship with devotees. I'm trying to understand this statement in terms of how to apply it. And one is that I'm able to relate to the Kumar story, that how the Gold Kumar had their love and attachment and relationship with the spiritual master, and that kept him going through all the experiences and all the
life. Yes, that's true.
So, is that an understanding of this?
That's a nice example. And that the essence of the relationship was he was serving the instruction. And the instruction was chant this mantra. And so that so many other things became part of that relationship, but that was it, that was the essence of the relationship. And receiving that gift from his spiritual master, that his spiritual master wanted him to receive. And feeling committed to his spiritual master to receive it. That was their relationship. And it took so many different shapes and forms. It was very exciting. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. That's a nice example. Now, how that might be applied to everybody in this room, it would take a different... it would be shaped differently, but that the principle can be illustrated by this example.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, we're done. It's time for kirtan. So when we chant together, try to remember some of these tips in improving chanting, and hopefully that will also help carry over to the 32 round day tomorrow. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.